To have Shirley be your personal oral health coach, you can reach out to her via email, shirley@crosslinkradio.com.
Hello, it's Crosslink Radio, where we talk about health from the eye teeth on down. I'm here to help you understand some of the mysteries of health from the perspective of the oral health care provider. That's me, Shirley Gutkowski. I'm a clinical dental hygienist. I'm always in the prevention mode, and I'm here to help you keep your health at its optimum by bringing a wide variety of guests with the information that you want to know. And today is another episode in our series on sugar, and I've been having a ton of fun talking with all the experts about sugar and each individual sugar and how it is presented in the body and how it's manipulated and how healthful a lot of these sugars are. Sugar just has such a horrible reputation that we really just lose focus on the whole sugar discussion, because some of them are really good for you. Sucrose is just really prolific, so it's got a really big target. So today's expert is Dr. Art Kapperald, who is the president of Concepts for Health, a health and healing expert teacher and lecturer. His 23 years of experience and tens of thousands of people asking his advice has enabled him to develop a unique system that enables people to take control of their health. His professional teaching experience to doctors and public covers a wide variety of topics. He is a graduate of California State University, Long Beach, with an emphasis on human biology. He went to Cleveland Chiropractic College and graduated in 1990 and began private practice in 91. He continues his education with hundreds of postgraduate courses totaling thousands of hours and I'm sure thousands of dollars focused on nutrition, diet, and lifestyle, clinical management, and whole food nutritional supplementation, as well as many others. So I'd like to introduce Dr. Art. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm awesome. So I'm so excited to be talking to a chiropractor.
I'm glad.
You guys are so maligned. But I think things are coming around.
Yes.
With respect to chiropractic. So we have a little discussion today about sugar, sucrose sugar, your basic table sugar, and nutrition in general. And I'd like to talk a little bit about where nutrition kind of started and who the pioneers were in nutrition.
Sure, I think that's a great question because it's not really understood too well. Most of the nutritional pioneers were dentists, and they saw a change in the amount of cavities that were coming into their offices at the beginning of the 1900s. Were very curious as to what was going on. And so Dr. Weston Price, he actually started to notice the dental decay and physical degeneration in his patients. And so he went outside the lab and toured the world looking at indigenous cultures that were isolated from processed food. And he found that in all cases, the characteristics of beautiful straight teeth, freedom from decay, long, strong bodies, resistance to disease were typical. And he also found that the incidence of tooth decay was 0.1%, which is 1 in 1,000 teeth or one cavity in 31 people, and that's unheard of today. What he noticed is that all these indigenous cultures, when you would do blood work on them, they had a blood chemistry reading of 10 parts calcium to 4 parts phosphorus. And so that became the benchmark for many of the other dentists coming in. There was a Dr. Melvin Page, who over the course of his work did over 42,000 blood tests on calcium-phosphorus ratio. And he became the gentleman that he actually developed and refined a diet outline that it wasn't a diet specifically to create a diet, but he found the foods that were causing that blood sugar ratio to go out of balance. And so what he was able to do by getting his patients to follow a specific food diet, he was able to maintain that calcium phosphorus ratio and halt the dental decay and degenerative disease process.
Just by manipulating the ratio of calcium and phosphorus in blood, by manipulating the diet, and what was the number one recommendation that he had, I wonder?
Oh, it's sugar and processed food. Sugar and grains, actually. You know, wheat, dairy, wheat. And so it's very, very prolific today. I mean, obviously, the amount of sugar and, you know, refined carbohydrates that we consume in this country is out of control, so.
It's easy. And what I've always said is that we in the United States have a choice between food and something to eat, and something to eat is really winning.
Exactly.
We don't have food anymore. We don't know where it came from. We don't know how old it is. We don't know if it's really that color green or if they added something to it, or we just don't have a clue. And we can't grow our own food enough in our own backyard to feed the whole family, so we're really kind of stuck. And there are strategies, obviously, to manage that. But all right, so
yeah, we can talk about a little bit of that today if you'd like.
We have a sugar issue here, though, that it's not just sugar that you sprinkle on top of things; it's the amount of sugar that's sprinkled into things before we ever get to them. And mostly it's regular old sugar, and a lot of times it's this high fructose corn syrup that seems to be on the shit list, pardon my French, right now.
Correct.
So, all right, let's talk about regular sugar. I mean, we get it from sugar cane. People have been eating sugar cane as indigenous people for millennia. So what happened?
Well, but it was in trace amounts back then, and sugarcane back then was actually a raw product. I mean, I remember as a kid, we would go to this place called Alvera Street in Southern California, and, you know, one of the great things was is you would get a piece of sugarcane, but it was just a piece of stem that you would chew on. And so the sugarcane that comes naturally that way has minerals and all other things in it as opposed to just the actual sugar part of it. And if you're eating a little bit of that, that's not going to be that big of a deal. I mean, if you look at in 1822, the average person had 45 grams of sugar every 5 days. And now it's 756 grams of sugar every 5 days, or it ends up being about 130 pounds of sugar a year, and high fructose corn syrup is about 140 pounds a year for the average person. So that means that somebody's doing close to 250 pounds of sugar and maybe 280 pounds of high fructose corn syrup, because I don't do any high fructose corn syrup, and I maybe do 2 pounds of sugar a year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's crazy. And so with patients, getting them to see those things are going to be a really, really big, big win in their ability to create and maintain health.
So what is so bad about the processed sugar over and above everything else, over the other sugars, your basic table sugar?
Okay, so we'll talk about some of the effects on the body's physiology. I had already mentioned the calcium-phosphorus ratio, about how just doing that processed food is going to shift that. So what happens with that? So say that you shift that calcium-phosphorus ratio, and let's take a soda that maybe has, you know, phosphoric acid in it as well, as, you know, something to make it have a little bite to it. So that's going to increase artificially that phosphorus ratio. So what's going to happen is you're going to have 10 parts calcium to maybe 6 parts phosphorus. So what's going to happen is the body is going to pull from calcium reserves out of the bone, out of the teeth, to try to buffer and create that optimum balance of 10 parts calcium to 4 parts phosphorus. So it's going to cause an erosion of bone and teeth. Now, if you have the opposite effect where there's too little phosphorus in the system, then what happens is the body is going to dump calcium, and that can cause things like you can get stones. You can get stones in your kidneys, in your liver. You can get heavy tartar buildup on the teeth. That'll happen sometimes with people. And so having that calcium ratio to phosphorus is going to be critical. And the less sugar that you eat, the more that can have the ability to stay in place. Now, that's just one thing. You also have the inflammatory issues within the gut. So if somebody eats a lot of sugar on a daily basis, you can get what starts as microinflammation in the lining of the gut, which increases over time, which will do a handful of things. First, it's going to affect the cells that produce hydrochloric acid and enzymes that help the whole digestion of food in the gut. And as you move farther down the gut, then it's going to cause pH shifts, which cause abnormal bugs or organisms to grow within that specific area of the gut, in which you can get a whole, almost a dysbiosis situation. And I heard you speaking with the woman earlier about that, about how, prebiotic and then probiotics.
Right.
Gut bugs are extremely important to health, but you have to have the right pH in order to make that work. And so having a gut that functions properly is going to be critical. Now, how does this affect us long term? So the average person that's 65 years old is only producing about 15% of the hydrochloric acid they did when they were 25. Now, that's from poor diet, stress, all the things that help shut off hydrochloric acid production. So as you get older, you're going to need a gut that's more and more functional. And so the more sugar that you eat, the more that's going to downplay that and make it a worse and worse situation. And so you're going to be worse as you get, older, which digestion is really critical as you get older. Now, we can also talk about inflammation. I spoke a little bit about that, but as you get inflammation of the gut and it becomes almost semi-permeable, you can eat foods that are even good for you, say green leafy vegetables, good proteins, and they get into the gut. And what happens is if you've got a barrier that isn't as strong as it should be because of inflammation, you can get some of those molecules going undigested directly into the bloodstream. And what happens is the body views those as a foreign invader. And so it actually creates an inflammatory and immune response. And so making sure that you have a functioning gut, even if you're eating the right foods, if it's not functioning properly, you can have an issue with inflammatory issues and pain issues. Did you have a question?
Let's take a pause right here for just a second and start putting things together a little bit. So people that have problems with gluten, and like a huge percent of the population does, most don't know that though, but so the gluten in the gut separates the cells of the gut so that there's room in between those cells. It opens up that junction between the cells. And so people that also are eating a lot of sugar have a higher incidence of junk being able to pass through because of the inflammation. Is that kind of a little circle there, or did I just make that up?
No, the inflammatory process of the lining of the gut actually facilitates those undigested foods traveling into the bloodstream. And so, even if you're eating something that's healthy, if it goes unchecked and undigested directly into the bloodstream, it can still cause some type of, some type of an inflammatory or a slight immune response. And so food has to be digested, obviously, and so you have to have a functioning gut to be able to do that properly.
Okay, interesting. All right.
Yeah.
Keep going.
So the biggest concern that most people come to a practitioner for is, wanting to lose weight. And what I see with that, through my experience anyways, is that I look at it as a graph, and I actually draw this out for my patients. And so the average person will get up in the morning and maybe they'll have coffee with sugar in it and some muffins or donuts or some sugary thing that sugar and flour. And it causes a blood sugar spike. And what happens is, you get that insulin response, and then the blood sugar starts to drop, and mid-morning it goes below what would be considered the normal threshold into something that's a hypoglycemic situation. And then that precipitates the next craving for something sweet to bring their blood sugar up. So they eat a candy bar or something mid-morning. And then they go for lunch, and maybe they have a sandwich, or they have pasta, or they have something that's going to be high in refined carbohydrates. And it causes that spike again. And then it's going to drop, and then mid-afternoon, they're going to get that craving. They're going to be sleepy. They're going to be fatigued, and they're going to grab maybe a candy bar and a coffee or something to pick them back up again. And then they're going to do the same thing with dinner. And then when they're watching TV, maybe they'll have ice cream or, something that's sweet. And so what happens if you look at that on a graph, the blood sugar is going from high to low to high to low to high to low. And the body can only absorb so much sugar, and then it's stored as fat. Because especially if you're sitting at a desk job, there's only so much sugar that the body and the muscles can use or are going to need. And so the rest of that is stored as fat. So you continue to do that over the course of days, weeks, months, and years, and that's how you start to get an increase in weight. Now, the problem is those sugar cravings, because you're in a hypoglycemic situation, those sugar cravings are going to continue to manifest. So the idea is to regulate those out by shifting your diet. And the average person can take anywhere between 2 weeks to a year and a half for sugar cravings to disappear. And so for some it's easy, and for some it's not.
Well, it's been very difficult for me. I've never had a sweet tooth, but I've always been attracted to salty foods, which are, guess what, grains, which are, guess what, sugar. So, that's another little trick that most people, and I never really appreciated fully until maybe the last year and a half or so. And then I was like, hold on a minute. Doritos aren't salty, they're sugar. There's still sugar. They collapse down into a sugar molecule in the mouth. I mean, it doesn't have to wait very long. So
Absolutely.
that's I think that point is lost in most discussions. People that don't have ice cream for dinner, people that don't have candy bars all day, people that have salty snacks all day are at the same risk as people who are having the sugars. Is that true too?
It's actually correct, cussing sugar, but any overconsumption of carbohydrate or starch can perpetuate exactly the same thing. And
So even
so,
though it looks like it's not sugar, your insulin is still has to be produced in order to maintain to take care of
absolutely.
that little spike of sugar that you had from the bag of potato chips. And then you still have all the things that happen physiologically, the same as if you would have had 2 tablespoons of sugar.
Absolutely. So the best way to combat that is to have a meal that is very high in green leafy vegetables, has good solid animal protein with adequate fat. You know, fat's been given a really bad rap in this country, and I recommend good, wholesome fats, because what happens is that stabilizes your blood sugar. Fat's a long, slow-burning fuel, and so you can eat, you know, I have a 12-year-old son, and every morning I get up and I make him eggs, and I make him, you know, organic sausage or bacon or something that's going to keep his blood sugar stable all the way until lunch. And every morning he's eating something like that, so he doesn't have those low sugar crashes. And so it's really critical for people, if they don't want to have those cravings, to find those foods or find somebody that can support you in the process with those type of foods to make the shift. Because I've seen amazing things happen when you just shut off that sugar craving. But the trick is that some people need help in that process, because it can be difficult for some people.
It just reminds me of a lot of different things that I've not ever put together before. One is, I don't know if it was another podcast or if it was one of the sugar craving books, that's probably a podcast, that talked about replacing all sugar with fat. And in your, you know, so when you're craving sugar in whatever it is, have something fatty instead, obviously not a hyper-processed fat. And then the other is a diet that I had read about a long time ago called the Shangri-La diet. And that the recommendation was to actually eat a tablespoon of olive oil, or maybe even talked about coconut oil, but nobody did back then, instead of, or eat right before you ate, or as a snack in between meals or something like that, to make sure that you had the fat in there. Are you familiar with that Shangri-La diet?
No, but I mean, it makes a lot of sense. You know, I know how I feel if I have blood sugar issues, and it's not comfortable. And I can't imagine, you know, young kids trying to sit still and be able to focus in school, you know, not having that situation. That's got to be tough. And so anything that is going to be put in their mouth that's healthy to support that blood sugar mechanism, you know, I think is going to be critical. And, you know, that's the fascinating thing, is that everybody has a need for a lot of green leafy vegetables. And everybody has some sort of a need for a good solid protein. Now, you know, there's different needs for different people. You know, you can look at the blood type diet and those type of things to see what's different. But you also need some solid fats. I mean, my wife and son and I go through 4 pounds of butter a week in cooking, and, you know, it's organic butter. But we eat that way because it really, really is important to maintain that stability.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people were cringing just now, and they're, you know, oh, cholesterol, blah, blah, blah. That has been the biggest hoax, I think, that we have ever had, medically speaking.
I've got something I'll share with you on that. I actually just got some information on that. In February this year, an expert medical panel released its recommendations to the U.S. government in a 570-page document that provides new evidence on preventing heart disease. And the advice is that to forget cholesterol and cut sugar. They say there's strong evidence that eliminating food groups like cholesterol is not necessary. And they say it's okay to eat saturated fats, red meats, eggs, and more. Now, they're saying that their recommendations are based on new scientific evidence, but this stuff's been around for a long time, right?
No, that's been around a really long time, a really,
Absolutely.
Really long time.
Absolutely.
It really, it hurts me. It hurts me physically when a friend of mine talks about not eating eggs because her cholesterol is high. And, oh, my God, now she's got such a swimmy head and her legs hurt from her new statin drugs. And I'm just sitting there going, who the hell is your doctor? And why haven't you fired them? I just can't. I can't get over it.
You know, I've got an anecdotal story about that. One of my very first patients, he's still a dear friend of mine, and he came into my office, and we worked together, and I did exactly, you know, what I told you, you know, along with some whole food nutritional supplements and some other things. And within like 3 to 4 months, he had to go take another blood test, and his cholesterol had dropped 40 points, and he lost a bunch of weight, and he walked around telling everybody. He brought me so many patients because he was so excited. And he was eating all these foods that he had originally been told not to eat. I mean, you know, if you find these things in nature, they've been around for a long time. It's not rocket science to me.
Well, and what all the other thing that people don't have a good handle on is that the body is opposite. If you stop eating cholesterol, it throws everything else off. You need to have
cholesterol. And the body starts making it, right?
It's right. And so now you're just in this weird situation, and we've got this big inflammation problem that's never being addressed. So you're getting rid of the inflammatory components by taking statin drugs. We are so far off track. You're taking the statin drugs, but you still have this inflammation that nobody's working with, and the inflammation alone is enough to give you a heart attack at some point. So it's not just a thing. We can't just demonize sugar. We can manage the sugar better. We can use alternatives to sugar. My big thing is that this is an innate taste response. It is an evolutionarily critical feature that we enjoy sugar more than anything else. This is not something that, like cigarettes, where you pick one up when you're 13 and now you're hooked. This is something that comes from birth. But we have choices and we have alternatives that we can use to get our sugar fix, our sweet fix that we want and that we need, and not turn it into some kind of a furnace in our body that fires up all of the cancer cells and yada, yada, and that's a whole nother thing.
Right, right. That's a complete discussion upon itself, right?
Yep. And I just so you know, I tend to do a show just on fats as well, because they're doing the same thing to fats, and that is really problematic as well. I'm not a very good spokesperson for the fat, because I do carry a lot with me, which I'm still trying to manage. It turns out that I have developed an allergy to eggs and to all dairy products, which were pretty high staples in my diet. So removing that is job one, and eventually, you know, we'll figure out what the rest of it is. But it's not a eat less, exercise more kind of situation, which is
absolutely
a thing.
Absolutely.
Well, Dr. Art, thank you so much. We're pretty much out of time here today, and I appreciate your time and the healthy life discussion that we had on providing health and achieving health by manipulating our sugar and our balance between phosphorus and calcium in our bodies. Have a great rest of the day.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye now.
Bye. And there we have it, a show on sugar, and a little far afield there for a couple of minutes. I hope nobody was too offended by that. But it's important that we get a global picture here, because it's not just one thing or another. It is an entire spherical feature of health, and that the body is opposite. It will respond totally in the opposite direction if you do something to it. So it's really important that we keep that in mind when we're talking about sugar, when we're talking about diet, when we're talking about healthy teeth, all different kinds of things. So there you have it. That was our sugar show for today. And have a great rest of the week, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye now.
If you enjoy the content and point of view, please leave a favorable review on Stitcher, iTunes, or Blog Talk Radio.